forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Work Stew.
Hello, and welcome to Work Stew. It's February 21st, 2013, and this is episode number 57. I'm Kate Gase-Walton. I'm the editor of Work Stew, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. I recently posted an essay on Work Stew by Kevin McCarg called How the Counting Crows Saved Me from Corporate Law. In this episode, I talked to someone who stayed with corporate law despite having a passion and a talent for writing. Here's Carolyn Edgar on the path that's made the most sense for her. Talking this morning to Carolyn Edgar, who's the VP and legal counsel at Estee Lauder, among many other hats. And so I wanted to start, Carolyn, with how you actually answer the question, what do you do? Because it's more complex, I think, than saying lawyer. How do you answer that?
I generally start by saying that I'm a lawyer because, you know, that is my primary profession. But I also you throw in there pretty quickly that I'm a writer and a full-time single mother, and that all of those roles are part and parcel with how I view myself and you know what it is that I quote unquote do.
Right. And let's start then with the part of your day, and I expect your nights, that you spend on law. How did that come to be? Like, if we go back in time and you think to when you were a little girl, what did you aspire to be?
That's a great question, because I always aspired to be a writer. You know, I used to, and still do, you know, have notebooks full of half-written stories and ideas and things I would jot down. And I told my mother, you know, once when I was a little girl that I was going to go to Barnard and move to New York, and that was going to be my life. But at some point, I also, and I don't even know when this happened, but at some point I became aware of law in Harvard, and I also told her that I was going to Harvard Law School one day when I was a little girl. And so, you know, one of the ironies of life is that I ended up doing the second, and I'm still trying to, you know, reach to become the first thing I said I wanted to be when I grew up. And I guess, you know, we never really fully grow up, and so maybe the lesson there.
Right, right. And what do you think it was that captured your imagination about law as a little girl? What do you think was the appeal that you saw then?
Yeah, I don't really know what the appeal was then, because I, you know, interestingly, I never remember saying, Mommy, I want to be a lawyer. I remember saying very specifically, I want to go to the Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the years, as I've struggled with trying to figure out how I can pursue the writing dream and whether or not, you know, I sold out or, you know, did I make a mistake by choosing law? What I think I've figured out is that law appeals to, you know, the analytical, rational part of my brain that likes to figure things out in a particular way and likes things to be orderly and to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this other creative side that I've always felt for some reason or another that I've suppressed to some degree, because, you know, my mother's reaction to those two statements, she was wildly crazy about the idea of, you know, me going to Harvard Law School, and was never so so excited about, you know, the writing career part of it.
Right.
So I think I grew up sort of feeling like writing was something I had to do undercover on the side, and I remember, you know, doing my homework and having these notebooks on the side, and when my mother wasn't paying attention, I would write my stories in my little notebooks, and then when she started noticing again, I was back to doing the homework. And so it's always felt like this sort of secret thing that I've only in the last, you know, maybe 5 years allowed myself to admit publicly that, yes, I am a writer as well as a lawyer. And these are two things that are both very important to me. But I think law appeals to a part of me, and writing appeals to a part of me. And where I came to was that I didn't really make a mistake or sell out or, you know, ignore some, you know, the path of my life, the predestined path of my life by choosing law. It's that I am both, and I need to embrace both and not beat up on myself.
Right, right. So you did, in fact, go on to Harvard Law School. And yes. Did you then plunge into your first job in law with great conviction about being a lawyer, or this sort of tension that you're describing of not really knowing and wondering if that was selling out? Was that very much in place for a number of years in your early jobs in law?
It was. I mean, I did, you know, plunge myself completely into my first, you know, law job, and in fact, you know, stayed at the first firm I worked for about 5 years, on route to partnership, and then I had my first child and realized that the path to partnership wasn't, you know, was taking a bit of a detour because I just couldn't sustain the schedule and the time commitments and the pressure of, you know, trying to make that push for partnership with an infant at home. So I left the firm for a couple years. I went to a small company, you know, still pursuing law, you know, pretty much full time. And I'll backtrack a little bit to say that before my daughter was born, and sort of for a period of about 10 years off and on, I would enroll in these writing courses and never be able to go.
Right.
I would enroll in these night writing courses at NYU, for example, and then I would, you know, maybe go to one or two classes and end up, you know, wasting the money I spent on the class. And that was sort of an ongoing frustration. And then after my daughter was born, I guess I, for a period of time, just sort of put it all out of my head and just decided to focus full time on being a mother. And I was still working full time, and I figured that was probably more than enough to occupy my time. So the writing, I just sort of, you know, pushed off to one side. And, you know, then, you know, the company I went to work for was sold to a bigger company. So I wound up going back to the firm and, you know, pretty much focused on law, you know, law and parenting exclusively until my second child was born a couple years later. So I stayed at the firm. I then made partner, had my second child. And at that point realized that, you know, I just could not pretend anymore that I could, you know, maintain the pace of staying at a law firm. So I left the firm and I decided to, you know, try the stay at home mom route for a while.
How did that go?
It was very interesting because that was the first time that I actually sort of turned back to writing, and I had more free time, and I took a class at Sarah Lawrence and loved it. And yet I found myself desperately missing the stimulation of work. You know, I enjoyed having the ability and the time to write. I enjoyed, you know, spending time with my child, but, you know, there's only so much of an interesting conversation you're going to have with a 6-month-old baby. And
I've had those conversations.
Right. And, yeah, you know, they're cute and they smile at you a lot, but, you know, you want a little bit more, you're coming back from the other side. And so at some point I realized that I am not a stay at home mom. I need to work. You know, I've always needed to work just, you know, for my own intellectual stimulation as well as the paycheck, and that I would have to just figure out the writing bit as I went along.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. It sounds like that period of time clarified a bit that law for you was not just a means to make a living, but was in fact fulfilling in other ways. Is that accurate?
That's right.
So you mentioned that you have a daughter, and I'm just curious. I mean, for all I know, she might come to you and say she wants to be an astronaut, but if she said she wanted to be a lawyer or a writer, would you give her advice in one direction or the other? What are your thoughts on that?
We've had a few discussions about, you know, what it is that she might want to be when she grows up. And she has said at certain points that she's pretty sure she doesn't want to be a lawyer. It wouldn't surprise me if at some point she changed her mind, because she is, if she doesn't turn up to be a lawyer, then I could very easily see her being some sort of advocate, you know, whether it's, you know, working for a nonprofit, you know, that focuses on an issue that she feels very passionate about or something else. She has advocacy in her soul very deeply, and has always, you know, argued passionately, you know, sometimes not necessarily rationally, but definitely passionately in favor of positions that she feels very strongly about. And so I could see her doing some down the road, changing her mind and deciding that maybe a law career wouldn't be such a terrible thing, or at least getting the degree and then figuring out what else she might want to do with it.
Right.
You know, but I've felt there, I think in part because, you know, my own parents were less supportive of the creative and more, you know, of the mindset that you have to do something that's going to be productive and useful and that's going to earn you a good living. I've always tried to err on the sides of allowing my children to find themselves. And I've always told them, you know, A, that at you know, my daughter's soon turning 16, my son is 11. I tell them all the time, you don't have to know what you want to be when you grow up right now, and you're probably not going to know what you want to be when you grow up after college, and you may not know after, you may be my age and still not quite know what you want to be when you grow up, and it's okay. So it doesn't matter that you don't have an answer. My daughter's, you know, right now, oh my God, college is coming in 2 years. I don't know what I want to major in. And I keep telling her, it's okay. You don't have to have everything figured out yet, because you know, you have a lifetime ahead of you to try different things and see what fits.
Yeah, no, you're right. To some extent, it is always an open question in some way or another. And that is exactly what WorkStu is about. So that's a perfect note to end on. And thank you so much, Carolyn. I really appreciate your taking the time and sharing your story.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for having me.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Carolyn Edgar. Thanks also to everyone who's written an essay for WorkStu. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstu.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStu website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.